Blake Davis is here, and he's got a ton of titles to go. I put the title thing there, and I should go back to it, but I was going to play the. Before I do that, I'm going to play this. Well, not that. This is what I wanted to play. Something you and I did recently.
We're here with Blake Davis, and this is the plant, which is at 1400
West 46th Street.
West 46th Street, down at the back of the yards in Chicago. I mean, and that's part of the whole, what we're dealing with. This is a plant that used to handle meat.
Correct. It used to be a meat packing plant, 93,000 square feet. Closed about 5 years ago. We were able to buy it. We're now turning it into the Chicago's first vertical farm.
And we'll leave it at that, because that was quite a tour you gave us, and you give lots of tours down there. And we're gonna talk about that in just a second. That video is on my website, mikenovak.net. It's right on the homepage. There's a couple of videos, and the first one there is just Blake sort of explaining what the plant is all about. The second one, he walks us through the aquaponics. And that's really cool, too. You are the I'll get to your title in a second. But before I do that, I just want to make sure people know that they're listening to the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter. We podcast the show. You can get it on iTunes. You can download it from the website. Go to MikeNovak.net. You can listen to a streaming. I hope some of you are doing that this morning. And you're also welcome to call in, 773-763-9278, if you have any questions. And I want to get back to my guest, who is the adjunct professor of sustainability and urban agriculture in the Industrial Technology and Management Program at the School of Applied Technology at the Illinois Institute of Technology. Come on, you guys, you academics, what's with you? Just say you're sustainability guy.
I'm the jack of all trades for sustainability. I also teach in students under a program called the Interprofessional Research Opportunities Program, which is an undergraduate research projects for undergraduate students at IIT. Every student's required to take at least two IPROs, and so I...
What's an IPRO? Come on, don't you throw acronyms at me.
IPRO is an undergraduate research project.
Okay.
And so my job is to kind of think of interesting things for undergraduates to do. Most of our students...
I got some. They can mow my lawn. They can weed my garden if you want. Sorry.
Most of my students are engineers or architects, so they're professionally trained, and they get a lot of book work when they're at IIT, but they don't have actual projects to work on. So the IPRO program is to try to get them practical projects that they can actually work on that will help introduce them to the world of work and all of that. And
well, you know, I don't know if you heard that earlier we had the students on from the Montessori school.
I did, and that sounded like a wonderful opportunity.
You're doing kind of the same thing. You're saying now when you get to this level of your education, you want to be doing practical stuff out
Correct.
In the real world. Now, name something, a practical project that one of your students might get involved in.
Okay, so I've actually worked on several projects this semester. I'm working with some students on a project where we're looking at the use of stationary batteries to store energy so that we can actually work some more renewables into our grid system. So we're looking at the types of batteries, how they'd be installed in the Chicago area.
All right, I'm going to stop you right there. You're a tech guy, all right? Why is it taking us so long?
I'll take that as a compliment.
It is. I just look at you. You're a professor. You're a smart guy. You're involved with the plan. We'll talk about that in a second, your involvement. But why is it that the battery technology hasn't moved faster than it has? I keep thinking that we could have solved the electric car problem decades ago, but nobody had a real interest in it. And why hasn't that happened?
Well, I agree with you. I think batteries would have moved a lot further along if some of the companies that had started out, like with the, you know, the old EV1 and things, if they had actually been pursued, with much more vigor. But my understanding of the battery market is that there's lots of good potential things that are in the pipeline. it's just going to take a while to get
them
commercialized.
But we keep hearing that. Come on, yeah, we keep hearing that. All right, it's like we've been hearing that since the Gemini project. You know, when we were sending people around the Earth in preparation, going, "Oh, look at this great technology! Now we got these batteries; they can do anything." Well, these cells, we've talked about cells. Ooh, everything cell. And the truth of the matter is, we haven't done it. We haven't had that technological breakthrough that takes us to the next level. And the breakthrough, frankly, in my opinion, is it makes internal combustion obsolete. And I think that's what kind of people are kind of afraid of. What happens if we get the breakthrough that makes internal combustion obsolete?
Well, you got to wonder who actually has an incentive to push this forward. Ever Ready is not the one who's going to benefit from this. So. But I think, if nothing else, we'll be dragged into it by foreign competition. I talked to a Ford VP a couple of years ago, and he says, "Well, you know, we can make twice as many hybrids, but we can't make them because all the technology is owned by the companies from the Far East, and so we get our allotment." And
what about our own technology? Don't we have? You're a smart guy, as I keep saying, and you get smart students, and that you're putting them out in the real world to do real things. Who's coming? Okay, I would think that independently, you could come up. There's many times in the history of the planet that the same technology was developed independently in different parts of the globe.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I think that it's. There's a lot of money that's invested in, combustion engines. So they feel
so
like
we're
it's
owned by the oil
them.
Companies.
Right.
Well, once
not
again,
not necessarily, but there's an incentive for GM to do what it does really well, which is
and really
internal
slowly
combustion engines.
When it comes to batteries.
Correct.
Oh, yeah. We're working on that. We're going to get to that real soon.
Yeah,
oh,
but first of all, you got to give us a little leeway on those car efficiency standards because they're just that's pushing it too far.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have you at 54 miles per gallon by 2025. I don't even know if the planet's going to be here in 2025. The Europeans already have over 54 miles per gallon, don't they?
Yep, they do.
So what are we doing? I mean, I'm embarrassed when the president comes out and says, "Oh, and all my environmental friends who's and God love them, and I know they're doing the right thing, and they say we got to support the president for 54." And I'm thinking, are you kidding? He should be looking at 80, and I don't know why he's not doing that, and I'm embarrassed by it, frankly.
Well, I think we're going to have severe and environmental crises between now and 2030.
Really?
And I think that we're headed for a rough period, and I think that may make things move a lot faster than we expect right now.
Well, I think that's the perfect segue to talk about the plant, because one of the things you're trying to do there is create, as I said earlier, create the future.
Correct.
And I'm glad you just – he just nods I, and he
I,
says,
I,
yep,
I,
that's
I
what
love,
we're doing.
I love the way you said that before.
Good. We're trying – oh, get – come on into the studio. We've got more folks here from the plant. In fact, if whoever's driving by the studio, just stop.
Really?
Drop in. What – for folks who don't understand – and I played a little bit of that video – earlier, which you can find at my website, mikenowak.net. Go to the homepage, and it's MIKENOWAK. This is an old meat packing plant on the south side of Chicago. And the brains behind this is John Adel, among others, but he's sort of the prime mover, right?
He is. He's our prime sponsor. He also has another building called the Chicago Center for Sustainable Manufacturing, which is an incubator for small fabricating businesses. And he kind of cut his teeth on that, and that's about 30,000 square feet.
Yeah, let me read a quote about that I found on your website. The quote about that building, the Chicago Sustainable Manufacturing Center, he was able to transform the facility from, quote, a burnt-out shell to 100% occupancy while using a mixture of waste stream recycled materials and leading-edge technology to make the building exceptionally energy-efficient and pleasantly non-toxic. The renovation was assisted by a core group of volunteers and by bartering with suppliers, tenants, and scrappers. Now, you know, he's one of those guys that you just you just throw up your hands. You say, there's no way I can ever do anything like that.
He's one of those guys you want on your side.
Yes. So why isn't John Adel working on the battery, okay, right now? I want him to make that battery so we can make an internal combustion obsolete.
One thing at a time.
Okay.
He was an art major.
And those voices you hear, that's got to be Carla McGarrah.
Hi.
Hi. She's the farm manager at the plant, and to her left is Tim Sparer.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Tim. Welcome. We're going to get to you guys in a second, but we have to start from the beginning because we start with a 93,000-square-foot meatpacking plant that until 5 years ago was a meatpacking plant or a former meatpacking plant.
Right.
And right now isn't, frankly, isn't a whole lot more than that. Okay, because I did the tour. 2 hours. Boy, man, you want to get your ear talked off. You'd get Blake Davis to give you a tour of the plant.
And that happens every Saturday at 2 o'clock, and everybody's welcome to come and have me talk their ear off.
And what does it cost to get a tour?
$10.
Yeah, it's well worth it. I mean, if you want a tour of something, again, do you want a tour of the future?
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Go to the plant.
Well, we asked for $10 for the tour, but we also asked you to come back and volunteer, and we feed our volunteers. So our basically our pitch is give us $10 now and then come back, volunteer, and earn your money back.
And I bet you get a number of people who want to come back and work there.
Quite a few.
Now, it's really hard to explain what you're going to see when you go there because I went there, I photographed it, videotaped it. By the way, wear your coat because it's very cold in that building. And you got to know, nope, but and she's better now, but Kathleen spent a week in bed after
that.
Sorry. Oh, yeah, because it was so cold in there. She got this respiratory thing. And it's just occupational hazard at the moment, isn't it?
Well, we can't really turn up the heat because there never was any heat in the building. It was always refrigerated below freezing
for
about
meat.
100 years. It
yeah.
was meat. It was a big – the whole building was a big meat locker.
And it's, you know, in the shadow of the old Chicago stockyards. What's amazing – and I wish I could describe it, but you took us to the basement. You took us to the various levels. There's hooks on the ceiling and tracks where the meat used to be. But in the basement, there's tools and pipes and the coolant system.
There's a room that used to hold all the ammonia compressors from the old building. They used ammonia before Freon was invented, and so they.
Which you said is very efficient, but if it leaks, you all die.
Yes, it's an inhalation hazard is
yeah.
what they call it.
A lot of it is like, oh, this really works well, except don't spring a leak, okay?
Yeah.
And you're still ripping out walls and machinery. There's a photo on my website. And I had my picture taken there because it looks like a transporter from Star Trek. And I'm just standing. I've got my Star Trek pose on there. So go down, take a look at that. Just amazing, amazing stuff. This is not just going to be one business. It's going to be an incubator for a lot of different businesses. Talk about some of the different businesses.
Yeah, okay. So what we're trying to do in the building is we're trying to set up a vertical farm, but we're also trying to set up an incubator for small food businesses. So the idea is that people need space that's suitable for what they're doing, that is inexpensive to rent, and they want to either start a new business and they want to grow it in our space, or they want to take an existing business and make it larger.
Do you have a preference for the kind of business you want there?
We do, actually. We want all kinds of food businesses. We're putting in a shared kitchen, so anybody who's doing cooking, certainly. We're putting a greenhouse on the roof, and you can rent space in the greenhouse. So we would like people who want to do vertically integrated businesses. So, for instance, in the building, you could grow basil. In the greenhouse on the roof, you could process it into pesto in the kitchen, and you could actually sell it on site. So some business like that. We also were looking for things like breweries, which had needed waste heat, which we're producing, and also were generating waste that we could use within our processes in our building. So any businesses that are producing a lot of organic waste, we actually have a way to use those.
The key is the anaerobic digester.
Correct.
And you intend, or at least your goal, is to make this a completely closed-loop system by 2015? Is that it?
We're expecting this will take about 6 to 8 years.
Oh, okay.
And
a little longer.
The reason is because we are using almost completely volunteers. We actually only have 3 paid staff in the building, not including me, not including John. So almost all the work is being done by volunteers, which is why we are very anxious to have volunteers come and work on the future with us.
Well, you heard that. So step up. You can find the link to the plant at my website, mikenovak.net. But if you want to check it out, just go to www.plantchicago.com. I've been meaning to talk to you about your marketing. I love the idea. You know, it's called The Plant, and that makes a kind of sense, but it's I would imagine it's kind of hard to track down if you're just doing a Google search. You know, you have to have The Plant.
So we got
to do a little bit about the marketing here.
Well, it's better than it was. We were trying to do Factory Farm, and we got roundly booed for that. So The Plant is actually an upgrade from our previous
But see, now that makes total sense. Factory Farm. But you're right. It's like, yeah, that's bad juju. Okay, you really can't use that. All right, I want to. What was that?
That's what we call the garden at our studio building.
Factory Farm?
But it was a former factory.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand that, but
they have
such a bad reputation, and rightly so.
Yeah, it's
Factory
not what
Farm.
You want to pull up when you go to search for that.
Getting to, you explained the whole system to me when we were there, and I want to get to the farming in a second, but you're the tech guy.
I and my students actually set up most of the vertical farming stuff that's there.
Explain what you consider vertical farming. I know it's supposed to be raised, but right now it's actually horizontal farming, at least your aquaponics. And you showed us, and there's a video of the aquaponics system on my homepage, mikenovak.net. You can see that video. Why do you call it vertical farming?
Okay, vertical farming is a concept that came out of New York. The idea is that you're in the city, you need to be able to grow food in very dense packages rather than being spread out all over the landscape like you do in the rural areas. So the idea of a vertical farm is you'd have usually an obsolete industrial building that's 4 or 5, 6 floors, and you would actually put farming on each one of those floors. So it's controlled environment agriculture, and it's on several floors of usually a vacant industrial building in the city.
So it's not necessarily one row crop that just goes up 20 stories?
Correct. Usually not.
Okay, because this is not the case. But so in a sense, it's vertical farming is a metaphor.
It is, and the advantages of vertical farming is that there's no droughts, there's no heat, there's no pests that will invade your space. You can grow 24/7.
Oh, you're always
going to
get fungus gnats. Okay, there's always going to be fungus gnats. You know that white fly will get in there at some point. You know, come on, we all know. All of us who grow plants understand how that works.
But the idea is that you will be able to control all of the environmental factors, the humidity, the amount of CO2, the temperature, all of these things that make plants grow to their optimal, you can actually control in a controlled environment space like the vertical farm.
So how is vertical farming different from hydroponics, different from aquaponics?
Aquaponics, hydroponics are all ways to implement vertical farming.
Okay.
The type of farming that you use inside isn't important. And before we actually finalized the system we're using at the plant, we tried, half a dozen other methods, aeroponics. We tried drip irrigation. We tried a whole bunch of different things. The reason we settled on aquaponics is that it's a relatively efficient system. You're actually setting up an analog of a simple ecological system. And so you have the fish producing waste. The wastes are actually used for fertilizer for the plants. The plants will take that fertilizer out and return pure water back to the fish tanks. That's the simple idea of what we're trying to do with the aquaponics system.
So while your energy system is going to be closed loop, so is the growing system.
Absolutely. It already is. We actually have a working system now that we're producing food out of, both fish and plants, that's pretty much sealed.
But you're not selling the fish yet.
We're not selling the fish yet, although we are selling some of the plants.
And, yeah.
And the
that's a problem, I assume.
No, we're not selling any of the plants yet.
You can pull that mic a little closer.
We have lots of people who are very interested in buying them, but we're still sorting out.
Okay. So you're just making sure it all works and it's all growing properly, and then at some point...
Yeah, we're testing different varieties, different variables, trying to get exactly our timing down so we know what we'll be able to produce when we're stepping up to that level.
Mm-hmm. In the studio, I have Blake Davis, Tim Sparer, Carla McGarra, all from The Plant on the south side of Chicago, back of the yards. You might have heard of this. You've guys been on my radar for a couple of years. I just haven't gotten around to do anything about it, but finally I did, and I'm so glad that you reached out, Blake, and invited me to take the tour. And it's just one of the other things you talk about, closed-loop systems. A lot of the flotsam and jetsam of meatpacking over decades is still in that building.
Right, and we're trying to preserve some of the architectural character. For instance, there's big, huge meat-smoking rooms, essentially, 40 feet long, 16 feet wide, 12 feet tall, where they actually smoke the meat. And we're taking those apart, reusing those pieces. We're bending the metal into tabletops and backsplashes for kitchens and things like that. So we're reusing all of that.
Oh, you're saving every nut and bolt in that place.
Well,
unbelievable.
We actually are. We closed on the building in July of last year, and in the time since, we've only actually sent two dumpsters worth of stuff out of the plant.
Amazing. And just use whatever you can. And we
reuse everything. We collect all the foam, everything, the rubble.
Even the foam.
The rubble from knocking down brick walls we're using to...
The glass bricks there, too.
Absolutely.
You got stacks, like a room with just stacks and stacks of glass bricks in them. Unbelievable stuff. All right, we're going to continue this conversation in a second. If you have a question or a comment, 773-763-9278. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. And just to give you a heads up when we come back, I do want to talk about the farming aspect of this, especially the idea of a greenhouse on the roof, which to me seems redundant. It does, and I'm sure there's a logic behind it. You're laughing at me, but there's always a method to your madness, right?
We always have something in mind.
Yes, you do. Okay. Don't forget that you can write us on Facebook. You can go to the Mike Novak Show while you're there. Like me. That would be nice. And so needy. Or you can tweet us. My handle on Twitter is @MikeNow. In fact, we got a couple of tweets here. This is the question. Are your guests thinking about using finches or other birds in the horizontal garden? I'm sorry, I called it the horizontal garden. It's actually the vertical garden. That was me. I was making a point here. I'm sorry about that, Blake. Now I've destroyed the whole illusion that you have there. And anyway, they write, some greenhouses are using them to control bugs. And by the way, that's Blake Davis, Tim Sparer, and Carla McGarra from The Plant on the Chicago South Side. Are you thinking about using birds at all?
We would use definitely beneficial insects to control harmful insect populations. I don't know if birds would be the best fit indoors for us.
It might. Well, you got space there.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, there's a lot of space there. Okay, I posed the question about the greenhouse on the roof. Now, first of all, Carla and Tim, is that something that you're going to be involved with as you do your growing?
Yeah, hopefully in the future.
Don't be a shy of the mic.
Sorry, quiet talker.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's definitely farther off onto what we're planning and considering right now. Right now we're focusing on developing the basement aquaponic systems, experimenting with some models for true vertical growing, like you would picture a vertical farm being like a vertical wall.
Now, you're the farm manager, so does that mean the aquaponics?
Primarily the aquaponics, but I also work with Tim and a bunch of our other volunteers to coordinate what's going to happen in the outdoor spaces.
So what's going to happen in the outdoor? Because obviously you – oh, man, I can't – have you done the soil test there? Do you know what's in the soil in that, on that piece of property?
There were a few soil tests several years ago when Pure Food's still in the building. I think it was sort of part of them closing everything down. And there are a few sort of trouble spots. But there's probably less than you might imagine overall because it's mostly just sort of packed gravel that's just impacted, you know, been sitting there for a very long time.
And they were dealing with meat rather than chemicals, although there were probably some chemicals used in the processing.
Well, we actually had two environmental studies done, a level one and a level two, and because the building had always been a food facility, a lot of the worst chemicals like asbestos and a lot of high VOC chemicals weren't allowed in the building because it had always been a food facility. So the only thing that we found that was a problem was that there was oil that had leaked out of a truck or something in the yard, and that's a small
area. Well, there must be
lead
also from the fuel that was used for the trucks coming into the parking lot.
True in every place in Chicago.
Well,
I'm sure.
Yeah, in my backyard too.
Yeah,
okay?
I don't think this is a pristine environment, but all things considered, this is probably most.
You look around on the outside, as you pointed out. There's barbed wire. There's railroad tracks. There's all this stuff.
Not really any soil there to speak of at the moment. So what whether or not it's contaminated is somewhat moot. I mean, we'll obviously contain.
So what do you plan to do to contain it and to, what kind of – you're going to bring in soil, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to build raised beds.
Raised beds mostly. Yeah, a little geochemical barrier, right? That's the hip way of saying, couple layers of wood chips and burlap and everything else.
So. And what is it you intend to use the outdoor gardens for?
That's kind of an ongoing process, I think. I think there's some talk of using some of the space as actually like a small urban farm incubator, has been one recent discussion. A lot of space for education and maybe community gardening for the neighborhood. And
Much more accessible than a lot of areas of the building, I would think. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it's kind of a visual intersection between what's going on inside the building and then the rest of the community. So we want that to be a good signifier when people come to the building. It's the first thing they see. Oh, this is what's going on here now.
Uh-huh.
The brewery's a brewery is going to be one of our first tenants as well, and they are very interested.
Always a good thing.
Always a good thing.
It's like, yeah.
So no
the
matter
beer's
how
here.
Bad things are going, the end of the day will be great.
Yeah.
But they actually are interested in having fresh hops grown. So one of the things Tim's been working on is actually growing locally adapted versions of hops to be able to supply to the brewery.
Tim, have you ever grown hops before?
I haven't. This is one of the things that's been outsourced to an iPro team, one of the IIT students, and Carla, formerly.
Yeah, my partner and I are homebrewers, so we have some hops growing in our garden.
And I did background on Blake before. What are your backgrounds here?
In terms of my background's mostly in education, and I did a lot of agriculture education with students on a small organic farm.
Where?
For a number of years in Pennsylvania. It's a small Quaker farm.
Oh.
So that's sort of the background I come to.
Carla?
Things at the plant.
I have a culinary background, and I grew up on farms in Arkansas and North Dakota.
So you guys all come by it honestly. Some of us are just, city boys trying to make a go of it here. And,
it's all right.
All right. And then the question I posed before was, you got a greenhouse on the roof. Like I said, it seems a little redundant. What's the purpose of that? Because the roof is where you get your sun anyway. Generally, a greenhouse is so that you can capture that sun. Well, it's already up there,
Okay, so one of the things we haven't talked about is that what actually powers the plant is this combined heat and power system. So we received a grant from the state of Illinois in the amount of about $1.65 million to set up both a combined heat and power system and also an anaerobic digester. So what the combined heat and power system will be to take biogas from the anaerobic digester, burn it in a turbine, and have it run a generator, which will provide all the power that we need for the building. Then the waste heat will be used to fire up the kettles in the brewery and also to heat the space itself. So the reason you have a greenhouse on the roof is because it's actually very convenient to be able to heat it with the waste heat from the combined heat and power system. So it's actually, because it's right there, we can hook right in and we can heat the greenhouse. And a heated greenhouse is much more useful than an unheated greenhouse during the middle of the winter when you need it the most.
And you're going to be working with other businesses in the area, too, right?
That's correct.
Taking some of their discarded materials?
Right. We're actually going to be diverting about 32 tons a day of waste organic material from both the brewery waste and also from surrounding businesses that do meat processing, that do meat flavorings. We're going to be taking that waste from their plants, putting it in our anaerobic digester with the spent brewer's grains from the brewery, and actually using that to create this biogas, which is about 85% methane. So it's equivalent to using natural gas from the street, but you're making it yourself. And you're reducing the amount of waste that's going to landfills. And you're actually producing a valuable byproduct called digestate, which is actually a high-value nitrogen fertilizer, which will be saleable.
Oh, I thought that was what you take when you have heartburn. that's a different product, isn't it?
Yes.
The question about that I have about the anaerobic digester is kind of the same question I had about battery technology. Where's that technology right now, and are you making a step forward in using this anaerobic digester?
Well, we're actually getting the money for this from a grant program that is generally given to farmers downstate. Anaerobic digestion is now being used 99% of the time in Illinois as actually a way of treating the animal manure from these big factory farms downstate. So when you have, you know, 100,000 turkeys at a time, you can't just kind of put that on the back 40 and be done with it. It's a big waste issue. So anaerobic digesters are being used primarily in Illinois for that.
How many are being used? How popular is this technology?
It's quite a big program, and there's probably several thousand installed in
really?
Farms downstate.
I had no idea.
Right. But it's being used for this specific sort of waste handling technology. What the advantage of what we're doing is that we're actually trying to kind of optimize the recipe that goes in. So if you just dump pig manure in it, you kind of get whatever you get. But we can actually optimize.
Pig manure in, pig manure out.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
So we can actually make a recipe that'll use, you know, a little bit of this from this business, a little bit of brewer's grains, and we can kind of make the optimal mixture. And so we can get the optimal amount of biogas, and therefore it'll be a much bigger contribution to energy creation in our building than it would be if we just had one type of waste. So that's kind of the improvement that we're making on our system. And we're actually going to divert a lot of organic waste that's now going to the landfill, and we're actually going to be producing all the electricity we need, plus a little bit more to sell back to the grid. So that's kind of another piece of the plant, is that we're going to be energy self-sufficient, we're going to be net zero with energy, and we're actually going to be negative with waste because we'll actually be importing waste. So our mantra is kind of the only thing that leaves the plant is food, but we'll be bringing in waste and actually turning it into something more
useful.
And
how do you create the electricity?
It's actually going through a jet engine.
No.
Yes, absolutely. It's going through a jet engine.
You are yanking my chain.
No, and actually it's going to be delivered this week. We're working with a company called Alcor in Arizona. It's being run by a guy who's a former aircraft mechanic, so he buys surplus engines and turns them into turbines. And I was hoping it was actually going to be a military fighter, because my line was, we're turning our swords into plowshares.
But, oh, that would be great.
It turns out it's actually going to be from a 747. But
darn. So close.
So close.
The question I have to ask is there anything like this anywhere else in the country?
There are little pieces of this in a lot of places. The problem is that it's never really been integrated into such a large framework. So one person does some hydroponics here. Someone does some aquaculture here. Someone does an anaerobic digester in a farm downstate. But putting it all together, making it into a system that actually is kind of an industrial ecology, that's the part that I think we're really making progress on that nobody's doing as far as I know.
And when is this set to, well, when all I need to know is when is the brewery open, okay?
I believe the brewery is scheduled for the end of the year. They were hoping, it's called the New Chicago Beer Company, and they were hoping to open on March 4th on the 175th anniversary of Chicago. But in fact, it took a little while for their suppliers now to get the tanks made and things. So that it looks like they'll be opening around the end of the year.
And how are you progressing, Carla, with the aquaponics?
Well, we have one system that's been online since early last year. Mm-hmm. That one's fully operational now. We're getting great production rates out of it, growing lots of arugula. Some of our fish are almost ready to harvest. Some of them are really ready to harvest. And then our second system we just brought online. We've got two of the four tanks stocked with 190 tilapia, and we're making the foam raft floating boards that we plant into to start filling that system with plants, too. It's partially planted now.
When do you see the beds going in outdoors?
So 2 went in last year. I want to say, I can't think of the square foot estimate, but a fair amount. And it's mostly going to be kind of tweaking stuff in there for a while, as you said, you know, kind of playing with the soil, playing with what we can bring in,
working
stuff like that.
The construction schedules.
Yeah, and there's the digester construction is going to be quite large, so kind of.
Yeah, I can't even imagine what a digester like that looks like.
Well, the stuff has to stay in the digester for about a month. So the tank is actually going to be 100 feet long and about 13 feet in diameter. And there's a big paddle wheel inside that keeps it all moving.
Like a big compost tumbler?
Yeah, like a compost tumbler. Uh-huh. Exactly. It's like on a different scale. Without oxygen, of course.
Correct.
And I think people need to understand that. We're tossing around anaerobic, and a lot of folks damn no idea what we're talking about. So when you compost in your yard, you use oxygen, and you turn, and that's one of the reasons you turn over your compost and your material, so that oxygen can get in there, so that the biology can take effect. And when it heats up, the biology is really working. What happens in an anaerobic condition, meaning there's no oxygen? So what's the biology in there?
Well, actually, anaerobic digestion actually goes back to earlier life forms that existed on Earth before we have all this oxygen. So these actually do kind of the same thing that composting microbes do, except that it does it without air. And the advantage of putting all of this in a closed tank is that you get this biogas that's fermented out of the digester. And that actually has some energy potential.
The point I will make is that if you do your regular composting poorly, sometimes you get that smell, and that's the anaerobic digestion, which
is another good reason to have it in a closed tank.
Yeah, absolutely. Even 100 feet long. You know?
Yeah. So this gas is actually then stored in a container, and then it'll be used as needed by the turbine that's running inside the plant. Mm-hmm. And the digestate is actually, it's because it's in a tank, a lot of the nitrogen in the compost pile ends up volatilizing and going into the atmosphere as nitrogen gas. When you have it in a closed tank, much of that nitrogen stays in the digestate itself. So it has about twice the nitrogen content of compost, which is why it's a valuable byproduct of this whole thing. So something that everybody's sending to the landfill now, we're getting all of our energy from. And we're also producing a valuable byproduct, which we can then sell.
All I have to say to you, mister, is you're too smart, okay? Just stop it right now. Just stop that.
Okay.
Hey, listen, thanks so much for coming to the studio, all of you. Blake Davis, I'm not even going to read your credentials again. No, nobody's interested. He's a technology professor at
Illinois Institute of Technology.
IIT. Thank you. Thank you. And he's one of the brains. In 25 words or less, how'd you get sucked into this project?
I grew up on a farm. I'm the oldest of seven. We did about 2 acres of vegetable gardening. I've always thought it was a good idea, and I'm in the city, so it's what I can do
and
here.
And you've been teaching for a while, too. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Carla McGarrah is the farm manager. Thank you. And Tim Sparer, let me know when you start planting stuff and start putting those beds in. And again, if you want more information, go to my website, mikenovak.net. You can click right on to the plant, and that website is www.plantchicago.com. Don't go to Factory Farm. They've given up on that title. Go to plantchicago.com. And by all means, go down and see this. It's, I think the time to see it is now, because when it's done, you won't understand what went into this. I'm glad I got to see it when it's this, all this stuff, right, you know, floating around inside.
And I might mention that we're there Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 2 o'clock. We do a tour every day. Monday, Thursday, Saturday. We do a tour every one of those days.
That's just fabulous. All right. Thank you all for being here. And I hope that, well, I'm going to be there for the opening of the brewery and the anaerobic digester. You got to call me down to see that. I want to see that
I'll
in
make,
operation.
I'll make sure you're right up front.
But don't let it leak, okay? All right.